Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. And one of the things I'm bringing you today is the thought that Michigan is more than just two peninsulas. If you think of Michigan as just two peninsulas, then a man by the name of Richard Santer wants to talk to you. He was born in Detroit, and he is a retired Ferris State University geography professor who has advocated for more comprehensive understanding of Michigan's boundaries. And he has done this for more than 45 years in a sometimes lonely crusade. He believes that too many people, including many who work in state government, do not acknowledge that the water of the Great Lakes makes up 40% of Michigan's territory, not to mention more than 400 named islands in those waters. So you see, the Michigan is not just the mitten and then the Upper Peninsula, but the boundaries of the state extend out into Lake Michigan, and Lake Superior, Lake Huron. And so does Illinois. The boundary of Illinois has an extension into Lake Michigan. So for Professor Santer, the journey began in 1974 when he received a newsletter from the Michigan Bicentennial Commission, which was planning a 1976 bicentennial activity in the state. And in their beautiful red, white, and blue logo, the commission left out the Western Upper Peninsula of Michigan. He knew Michigan had lost a number of border disputes with neighboring states in cases decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. And he blamed those losses on Michigan's inattention to its boundaries. In a 1936 case, Michigan lost some of its water resources and four islands in Green Bay when its disputed boundary with Wisconsin was redrawn by the Supreme Court in Wisconsin versus Michigan, 297 U.S. 547. Santer also explained that the boundaries of the Menominee River Islands were reassigned by a 1947 interstate compact that reset the Pigeon Point Lake Superior water border with Minnesota. As recently as 1973, the Supreme Court took 150 square miles of Lake Erie water and bottomland from Michigan and gave it to Ohio in the case Michigan versus Ohio, 410 U.S. 420. Near the famed Toledo Strip. And that Toledo Strip, you will remember, was given to Ohio to pave the way for Michigan to become a state back in 1837. Well, Professor Santer has a, you might say, a lifelong ambition to get people to pay more attention to Michigan's actual legal boundaries. And then Professor Santer also intervened in the creation of the Michigan Quarter in 2004, even talking to the director of the U.S. Mint about how the state's borders should be depicted. He recalled, "I failed and didn't get the borders in. What I did get was the two peninsulas more clearly shown as making up Michigan, and I convinced them to show more accurately the position of Isle Royal in Lake Superior. Well, intense focus by Professor Santer helped lead to Public Act 147 in 2009, a law that required the depiction of both of Michigan's peninsulas by all state government agencies, but it did not require that those depictions include all the Great Lakes waters and their islands. And he said, well, unfortunately, you win some and you lose some. But the main argument in favor of adoption of Professor Santer's proposal was that neighboring states had periodically won claims and disputes over Michigan and its maritime boundaries. Asserting boundaries in state law could be used as a part of the legal defense if it was ever challenged again. Ask how things stand today. After his years of effort, Professor Emeritus Santer gives himself an incomplete. There's a lot of work still to be done, he said, to show Michigan's legal boundaries and its real shape. And the next thing that we're going to look at today is business and technology news. First of all, Bill Gates is now the top private farmland owner in the United States, with more than 242,000 acres across 18 states. Cable billionaire John Malone is still the country's largest landowner, with 2.2 million acres of ranches and forests. And Amazon's Jeff Bezos is also investing in land and owns more than 420,000 acres, most of it in West Texas. Well, in 2019, Americans spent over $13 billion more on their pets than on alcohol. $90 billion to alcohol's $76 million. We also spent more than twice as much on our pets as we did on major appliances, fresh fruit, or tobacco products. I always thought that we'd do anything for our pets. Well, in a survey from E-Trade Financial, it was found that 29% of investors with $1 million or more in the market think it is approaching a stock bubble. And 16% believe we are already in one. Still, 59% expect to see another gain in the S&P 500 during the first quarter of this year. And then there's the Postal Service. The U.S. Postal Service delivered only 64% of first-class mail on time around Christmas. Performance was much worse for other mail, with only 1/10 of marketing materials and periodicals arriving on time in some parts of the country. And now news from the technology sector. General Motors unveiled the renderings of a future Cadillac that could take to the skies. Yes, the skies. The automaker stunned attendees of the virtual Consumer Electronics Showcase last week by producing a virtual demo of its first EVTOL, or battery-powered vertical takeoff and landing air taxi. The Cadillac-branded four-rotor aircraft looks like a single-seat drone, presumably for short urban trips. It's powered by a 90-kilowatt battery, smaller than the battery used by other EVTOL startups, that can deliver speeds up to 56 miles per hour. Beyond that, however, details are scarce. Last week, Fiat Chrysler announced a partnership with electronic aircraft designer Archer to develop their air taxis. But GM appears intent on going it alone to build its own, as they say, aerial mobility business. And then there's China's sanctions creating a chip gap. A worldwide chip shortage has forced several major automakers to idle their assembly lines. Car manufacturers such as Ford, Subaru, and Toyota rely on chips to power everything from driver assistance programs to brake systems, which pits them against the sprawling consumer electronics industry for supplies. Their supply problems have been made worse by the government's actions in the China trade war. One key factor was when the White House banned Huawei from buying chips made with American technology, the Chinese telecom giant. They began to stockpile chips to keep building what products they could. Let's see what's happening around the world. In Tokyo, the question is, will the Olympics go on? Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga insisted this week that the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, postponed last year because of the coronavirus, would begin in July, just as scheduled, even though COVID cases are spiking in his country. Japan is in the midst of its third coronavirus wave, with a record 7,800 new infections being recorded by January 8th. We will build watertight anti-infection measures and hold an event that can bring hope and courage to the world, Suga said. The latest polls show that more than 80% of Japanese citizens think the Olympics should be postponed. And then we'll look at Sao Paulo, Brazil. With its hospitals running out of oxygen and new strains of the coronavirus ripping across the country, Brazil this week slowly began vaccinating its citizens against COVID-19. Brazil failed to place orders early with major vaccine makers because President Bolsonaro has consistently downplayed the pandemic and has ignored his scientific advisors. The government now has only 6 million doses on hand for a nation of over 200 million people. His political rival, Sao Paulo State Governor João Doria, has procured several million doses of China's Sinovac for the people in his area. And then we look up at Edmonton, Alberta, in the fight for the Keystone Pipeline. The Canadian province of Alberta this week threatened to take legal action if the U.S. cancels a crucial permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, as it had pledged to do. The province has sunk some $800 million into building the 1,200-mile pipeline, which would carry up to 830,000 barrels of crude each day from Alberta's tar sands to Nebraska, where it would join existing pipelines linked to refineries on the Gulf of Mexico. The project has sparked fierce opposition from environmentalists and U.S. indigenous groups. And then over to Berlin. Who will be Angela Merkel's replacement? Germany's ruling Christian Democratic Union has picked a new party leader. His name is Armin Laschet, the centrist choice of Chancellor Angela Merkel over Friedrich Merz, a candidate further to the right. It's unclear whether Laschet, the premier of North Rhine-Westphalia, will win the chancellorship in September elections, because polls show that many Germans who voted CDU in recent years support Merkel more than they support her party. And then in Ethiopia, starvation is beginning to set in. Ethiopians in the war-ravaged northern region of Tigray are dying from lack of access to health care, food, and fresh water. The federal government launched an offensive on Tigray region in this last November, accusing the local ruling party of insurrection. Thousands of people died in the fighting, and some 50,000 people fled to Sudan. The roughly 4.5 million who remain in Tigray are in desperate need of humanitarian aid. Children are dying from diarrhea, from drinking from the rivers, and with almost no health care available, people are dying from pneumonia and childbirth complications. Not a promising outlook. Thank you. from my favorite book called Word Nerd. I want to give you some phrases from Shakespeare. These are phrases that we use every day and don't think about their origin. So here we go. Number one, a laughing stock. That was from The Merry Wives of Windsor. You're all familiar with All That Glitters Is Not Gold. That's from The Merchant of Venice. And an expression that we use often, we say, as good luck would have it. Well, that's from The Merry Wives of Windsor. And when you meet someone, you want to maybe break the ice. That's from The Taming of the Shrew. And you've heard the expression, I'm sure, of clothes make the man. That's from Hamlet. And a not uncommon phrase is fair play. Well, that's from The Tempest. Forever and a day. You'll find that in As You Like It. The Green-Eyed Monster. That's from Othello. Green-Eyed Monster of Envy. Huh? And he has a heart of gold. Henry V. And there are others. Others which we use often and really don't realize where they, from whence they came. You may have heard the expression bloodstained, huh? That's from Henry IV, part one. To swagger. That's Midsummer Night's Dream. Tardiness. From King Lear. Time-honored. Richard II. Unreal. That's from Macbeth. And in a pickle. That's from The Tempest. Hey, it's all Greek to me. That's Julius Caesar. Love is Blind. The Merchant of Venice. Pure as the driven snow. That's Hamlet. Oh, the lady doth protest too much. That's from Hamlet too. You've heard the expression, a wild goose chase. That's from Romeo and Juliet. And wear my heart on my sleeve. That's from Othello. I thought you might enjoy knowing the literal meaning as we come to the end of our show today of bamboozle. The literal meaning of bamboozle is to make a baboon out of someone. So remember that the next time you use that phrase. And the word haboob, very common in the Middle East, from the Arabic, hab, meaning wind or to blow. And a haboob is a giant wall of dust or sand that usually occurs during the stormy summer months from a collapsing thunderstorm. So there you have some Shakespeare and some word meanings as we tidy up for the end of the show. So Dan Dillman is here asking you to keep safe. wear your mask. Also, social distance, my friends. It helps us all. You have a good day. And tune in to a little of this, a little of that. I like having you around. It encourages me to find more things that fit into a little of this, a little of that. So when you tune in, I'll be here to say hello. But for now, it's good day, good cheer. Goodbye.